I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Friday, April 6, 2018. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present today, Senator Meyer, Vice Chair Senator Coghill, and myself, Senator Giesel. I expect other committee members to come as they can. Senator Bishop and Senator von Imhoff are engaged in Senate finance meetings right now. Thanks very much to Ann and Doug, who are helping us out on the audio today. Today, the committee has one item on its agenda. We will take up an update from the University of Alaska on its land grant status and its upcoming timber sale in the southeast in conjunction with the Department of Natural Resources. This committee began this legislative session hearing about the state of Alaska's timber opportunities. Our state forester pointed out the lack of available timber to make sales economic. The Department of Natural Resources is our state's land manager, but we also have a public land-grant university based in Fairbanks. Land-grant universities are not dissimilar to our statehood compact in that they were given lands to monetize to sustain the operations of the organization. Land grants are not only necessary for public universities to function, but also to unburden students from accessing higher education. So those lands are an economic driver. Last year we heard from University President Jim Johnson about the rock and hard place that the land grant status finds itself. The university never got its land entitlement from the federal government, and our state constitution bars us from transferring state land to the university. So today we're going to hear from the university about a new concept to solve this and hopefully work out a solution to these lands for Alaska students. So, welcoming in person today, Mr. Miles Baker, the Associate Vice President of Government Relations, and Ms. Christine Klein, the Chief Facilities and Land Officer for the university. And online, Mr. Andy Harrington is online. He is the Associate General Counsel. We also have some DNR folks online. Let's see, it looks like Chris Mache, he is the state forester, and that looks like about it right now. We are hoping that Deputy Commissioner Hansen can join us later as well. So, welcome very much to Mr. Baker and Ms. Klein. If you would introduce yourself for the record, and you have a PowerPoint to present to us. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Good afternoon, for the record. Miles Baker, Associate Vice President of Government Relations for the University of Alaska. As you said, I'm joined today by Christine Klein, who's our Chief Facilities and Land Officer. We'd like to do today, Madam Chairman, as you indicated, last year we tried to do some presentations to, I've been saying, sort of socialize this issue again in the legislature, because it's been a while since the legislature had specific legislative action on our land grant deficit. And so wanted to give you an update on what we've been working on and our thinking on a solution, talk a little about what we do currently with our existing lands and the performance of the trust, and then also talk about the recent announcement of a timber sale. Madam Chairman, gave a very, very good explanation, but the University of Alaska is a land-grant university, which is we're part of a system of over 70 around the country, and these were universities that were granted federal land for them to sell, to raise funds, and to establish and endow a college in every state. Ultimately, most of these became public universities, offering a full range of educational opportunities. However, there are a few land-grant colleges that are private schools, MIT, Cornell University, for example. The University of Alaska, and I'm on slide 3, however, in this process, only Delaware and Hawaii received a smaller public land-grant. Hawaii actually received an appropriation from Congress in lieu of land, but the University of Alaska only received about 110,000 acres of our original entitlement, and we estimate that we have about 360,000 acres that are due to us. Currently, the university has about 150 a little over 150,000 acres, of which 12,000 are used for educational research properties. I won't go into great detail. There's a few slides here on sort of the history. They're in your packet. There's a very detailed several-page document that Mr. Harrington, who's online, helped prepare, and he's very knowledgeable on these issues. But what I would just point out is that the concept of land-grant colleges started in the mid-late 1800s, and there were three federal laws, really, that would have established what the University of Alaska should have received. Of those three, we only ended up receiving land really under the third one listed here, which was the Sutherland Act in 1929. And the reason for that really is sort of laid out on page five, is that when statehood, and I think you're familiar with the problems we've had with getting our federal land in general, and due to surveying, remoteness, and various issues like that. Well, when the discussions of statehood started, the university had still not really received most of what should have been the entitlement under those original federal laws. Some of the statehood acts that were worked on in Congress conceived giving the university up to as much as 10 million acres in that process. Ultimately, the Statehood Act that passed, Congress's view was that the state was getting 103 million acres and that the state should therefore take responsibility for fulfilling the unfulfilled federal obligation to the university. And so the statehood actually included some repeals of those early federal laws that would have ensured we got our land. The legislature since that time has been extremely supportive. Even the very first Alaska state legislature passed legislation to transfer 1 million acres that was vetoed by Governor Egan at the time, largely for some of the same reasons that we find ourselves in today, the theory being, you know, if the university needs money and it needs to be appropriated money, that's a legislative responsibility and sort of a concern about early in our statehood dedicating certain resources. As we sort of move forward, complications of transferring land, and then we entered the era of ANILCA and ANCSA, and there was basically freezes put on, controls put on by Congress as those major pieces of legislation went through. Post that period, the Alaska delegation and the federal delegation worked on several pieces of legislation to resolve it. The state legislature again in 2000. Most recently, the action the legislature took was in 2005, which is the very end of slide five. And in that law, the legislature actually listed the pieces of land that would come to the University of Alaska. That resulted, I'm on page six now, in a lawsuit by the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. Went through the courts, and the Supreme Court ultimately ruled that that would be a violation, that transferring that land for the purpose of generating revenue would be a violation of the anti-dedication clause of the Constitution. And so today we find ourselves back with we have about 150,000 acres. We have received more land than we got from the feds through some private donations, through some municipal contributions. But we still have this deficit of about 360,000. The university obviously feels strongly, and we've gotten very strong direction from the legislature over the last few years that we need to monetize the lands that we do have. We also and to lower the our reliance on state general funds. Filling this deficit is a top priority of ours. We have been working with the federal delegation on what some opportunities are, because the exemption, there is an exemption in the state constitution that transfers of land, or in this case, dedication of land, would be permissible if it's done under to comply with the federal program. And so on page 8, there you see it there, when required by the federal government for state participation in a federal program. So what we have been working with the delegation on, the Congress for quite some time, and the feeling has been that the state is not going to get new land from the federal government beyond the 105,000 at statehood and the 44 million we got as part of ANCSA. And so, and they, first, secondarily, the federal government still feels that they extinguish their responsibility, and it's really the state's responsibility to fulfill that remaining obligation. But we need a federal program to make this happen. And so what we have been proposing and working on most recently, and there is a one-pager in your handouts on the concept, but what we're working on doing is the university and DNR to identify lands that either are existing DNR lands that already exist, or that potentially are lands that the state has selected or top filed that haven't been transferred from the federal government as part of the 5 million outstanding acres that are still due to the state, and potentially identifying those as lands that fulfill the university's obligation. And the university has land that, and Christine will go and hit on some of this here when I finish after this slide, but I won't say, many of the parcels of land that we do have are in holdings in national parks or in other conservation units that don't have particularly a lot of monetary value for us. They have huge, tremendous potential public benefit for the country, and we are working on potentially a program that would allow us to transfer back to the federal government some of those, that would allow the parks to contiguously manage, so it's good benefit for the federal government from that perspective. But it would obviously have to come with some sort of an exchange. DNR has, and I will let them speak to this, but there are issues they are trying to work out with the state's remaining selections, both on the administrative side and procedural side. And so the thought is that we would develop a sort of robust program that would be a piece of legislation that would resolve many of those remaining issues, and it would include the university's land grant as part of that. So the change, I think, from last year when we were before you was that we weren't looking at that concept of potentially identifying within the yet-to-be-transferred lands that those might be used for the university. Obviously, both DNR and the university are looking for the most attractive pieces of land to generate revenue, which is really what we want to do with the university trust. And with that, Madam Chairman, if I could turn it over to Christine, and she'll talk about our current holdings and what we do currently with our land.
That's great. First, any questions, committee members? All right. Go ahead, Christine.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I am Christine Klein, as mentioned earlier, and I am the Chief of Facilities and Lands for the University System. And what I thought I'd do now is discuss our current land holdings, what we have with our limited trust holdings. And the slide here has, as Miles mentioned, we have about 150,000 total acres. There's two categories. One is educational and one is investment. basically the educational parcels are those that the campuses reside on. So we retain them for educational purposes. There are some research sites and other things as well, but primarily the purpose is educational. Then the remaining 138,000 acres are investment, or what we classify as investment, with the primary purpose being to monetize those to provide a revenue, positive revenue to the trust endowment. What I wanted to point out here, of those holdings, generally the largest portion are very remote. They're isolated and largely inaccessible. For example, we have about 10,000 acres within the Wrangells, many parcels on top of mountaintops. So it would be very difficult to do things with them. In many cases, we have land under Brady Glacier that was given to us that has a mine claim on it, which is surprising. We have others that are on the Alaska Peninsula, so there's many that are very difficult for us to really do much with. We also have one of our largest portions of our holdings are actually in forested lands, and we have some subdivisions. We do not have oil and gas. We do not have a lot of active mining claims. And we have very few, if any, urban parcels that would be of higher value to monetize. And that is quite unlike other land-grant universities. For example, the University of Washington has some of the most valuable property in Seattle. They have two blocks of land in downtown Seattle for, that they are able to monetize for their endowment. The University of Texas, for example, has a percent of oil and gas revenues that go to their endowment, just as some examples. The next slide on page 10 shows what our current land holdings are, sort of broken down into our investment classes. We have about six classes that our Board of Regents approved a year or two ago in terms of looking at what is the value of those particular lands. Do we know anything about it? How can it be monetized? And as Miles mentioned, we don't have a lot, and so we are working very hard to see and assess what it is we do have and how might it best be used. As I mentioned, it's primarily remote, and these are estimates. They're approximations because these numbers do change and go up and down a bit with permits and leases and various things. On slide 11, as I'm sure many folks know, a land grant, a university, when it has lands, those lands were granted by Congress for the specific purpose to be monetized to help help universities be a little more self-sustainable. And they are dedicated exclusively for the benefit of public education of universities. There were about three acts of Congress that set up these public university trusts, and as I mentioned, they're dedicated for the exclusive use of public university education, and that is also further, I guess, memorialized, if you will, in Alaska statute, and that falls under Alaska Statute 1440 with respect to university properties. How we monetize them, what I wanted to show is how the breakdown of money has been generated over the years. The revenue has really been income since 1987-88 for the most part, when lands began to be transferred to the university. Some of our lands are actually prior to statehood. However, the majority of revenue really didn't start to be generated till late in the 80s. The majority so far, $159.5 million, has been from land sales. The most valuable lands typically were sold off early in the process. The second has been forest timber sales, and gravel and rock, even peat extraction in Fairbanks has been used for soil. We have one business there that leases and generates peat, mines peat. We have some commercial and private leases, not a whole lot because we don't have a lot of urban properties. And, of course, there is the potential for some mining coal, oil, and gas, but those have been very, very limited. And the land department has generated over $210 million since 1987 with those trust assets that we do have. When we look at the trust balance over the last 30 years, you'll see how it kind of fluctuates on the market, based on the market. And the one thing that has been fairly steady is the real property revenue that's been generated. So that's what this graph is mainly showing you, and how it's been utilized for various needs of the university, but primarily the jumps up and down that you see there were based on the market.
It's interesting, Christine, that you started getting the land granted right there in 1986, which was our significant recession when people were leaving the state, and perhaps the university was quite suffering then, right, in terms of revenue.
It was. And that's when the department got very active, as you can see on the purple. It got its lands. It took a year or two to start actually really monetizing them and getting established. Mm-hmm. The next slide shows you land returns, our comparison. I've been at the university for about a year, and one of the first things, being a former business person, I wanted to look at what do we have and how can we monetize it. We don't have a lot of land left that is of much value in terms of monetization. And so I looked at, what was the return on those lands over the period of time that we've held them. And as you can see, revenue on a per-acre basis is about $116 an acre. The trust timber harvests, while they did not occur every year over the past 30 years, they were held continuously and have generated $2,735 on a per-acre basis. So it gives you a picture of what has provided the most return to the endowment, because I do get questions along those lines, and many questions often on why don't you just sell your land. We have to be very careful of that, because we really only have a very small endowment, only a quarter of what it was we were owed under acts of Congress. And so we have to be very, very careful when we sell our lands. There's a benefit, but it's a one-time benefit. It's gone once we have sold it. Whereas with some of our timber harvests, what we have found that many of the parcels that were granted to us had actually been harvested when they were transferred to us and after they were given to the state through DNR. And so what we've seen is many of our forested parcels are now second growth timber. And, of course, they're still in our inventory. So that's a long-term sustainable a program for us. We've had a very positive forest stewardship program. It has provided higher revenue, and in the local communities has provided jobs and a much greater return for the state of Alaska based on the economic impacts. And so we do look at those things as well.
Question?
Yes, Senator Meyer, question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Christine. A couple questions. First of all, on the timber harvest, do you ever run into opposition to leasing those out?
We do. Oftentimes, particularly the ones closest to communities. So far, I think and I don't know the long history, but most of our parcels are very small, so we often combine with others to do joint efforts, collaborative efforts, because as I mentioned, most of our parcels are very isolated and very difficult to get to, so we usually have to partner with private entities, private landowners, other agencies, the DNR, Division of Forestry, Alaska Mental Health Trust, for example, and the United States Forest Service.
And another question?
Yes, Senator Meyer.
I know the University of Alaska is not very old yet, and the state of Alaska is not very old, but have people left land to the university when they pass?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, there have been donations to the university. Those are often when we go, it's a process, of course, and they can be earmarked, if you will, or designated for certain things, like to a college program. And a majority of those that I have seen so far have actually been dedicated to certain schools or programs specifically. Very few go to the endowment in general. That answers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Just so you know, Matt Cooper is also online, one of your general counselors, and Wynn Menifee has joined us also from the Mental Health Trust Land Office. So if we have any questions for him.
Thank you. On slide 14, this is to illustrate some of our forested parcels. We have approximately 17,000 acres of forested parcels across Alaska. If you see, one of the tables actually shows more, but we have 17,000 that could actually be harvested, I think would be the better way to characterize that. The red dots are to illustrate to you where some of our activities have been and on what where they are located in our state and what they've provided to the university and the state of Alaska. As I mentioned, a large portion of our endowment balance was from timber receipts. Over $50 million came from timber over a 16-year period, and it has been our highest return on investment that we have had. Primarily second growth forests, and often these are rotation cycles. And when we have done harvests over the years, while an entire tract may be put up for sale, it is rarely that a whole tract is actually harvested, and that is based on the type of timber, the species, the age, the number of flutes, the condition, market rates, of course, and things like that, factors like that. A few of our sites, these are not all of them, Kaufman Cove, Icy Bay, Mitkoff Island near Petersburg, Whipple Creek in Ketchikan, Blank Inlet in Ketchikan, Edna Bay on Kosciuszko Island, and the Nenana and Glen Allen areas, as well as in the interior, are some of the examples of areas we've had active sales. We generally try to do one to two a year, depending on what we have, but it is highly dependent on having others in the area who we can collaborate with, simply due to the costs of doing these things, making it economical, and piggybacking on others' efforts as well so that we can do it efficiently and effectively.
Very good. I also want to let folks know that Deputy Commissioner of DNR Heidi Hansen has joined us as well.
One of our examples that I wanted to mention to the Resources Committee here is one of our ongoing sales, timber harvest sales right now in the Edna Bay area in southern southeast Alaska. It has been a highly successful win-win model. We're quite proud of it. It's the first time that there has been joint use of the U.S. Forest Service Federal Good Neighbor Authority in Alaska. And it was negotiated with site-specifics in order to address concerns in the area and give us more flexibility to address those. Excuse me. And it has really resulted in better use of the resource and the assets that we have there. There are over five partners in this that are working together collaboratively, and many of the partners are sharing resources, utilizing one another's infrastructure, for example, and not charging high rates and so forth, so that they can all be more effective at what it is they do. And it has resulted in, I think, a much more effective win-win for everyone, and particularly the community. I wanted to mention this was one as an example that was highly controversial. The community was almost totally opposed, and now and through the process, which took some time and a lot of working together, they're totally supportive. I've been out there, and they have asked us several times when we'll have another sale, and we were very active as the university itself in helping make these things happen. So I like to point this one out as a real a win-win model of stewardship, of our forest stewardship program, and what it is we try to do, sort of our philosophy in our department of some of the benefits. And, we really have sort of this whole philosophy. It's of benefits to the community, economic benefits, and ecological stewardship. So I think that has been a nice example that really showcase that.
And you're from Southeast. Is that true, Christine?
I am, Madam Chair. Yes, I'm originally from an area near Ketchikan, one of the original homesteads in Alaska. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. One sale that we have occurring right now that you may have heard about that I wanted to mention, we've actually had two sales in the last year. One sale was on the Chilkat Peninsula in Haines of about 400 acres, and the community was really not super thrilled about it. We had 65% in support and 20-some percent opposed. But it was near some properties that we had previously developed for a residential subdivision. And so we have rethought that and are looking at doing some residential development on that particular parcel. Some of it had been previously logged and harvested in the past. The sale that we have going on now, and through that process, I want to say we didn't get any bids, but we got very clear interest in the parcel as well as our other holdings in that area, which is where we have the majority of our remaining trust lands that have forested that are forested parcels. It came with some conditions, and so some of those had to be worked through from the buyer. And in that particular sale that we have going on, it is currently in public notice, and it will be a 10-year negotiated timber sale to provide supply to Asia and domestic markets for timber, as well as a new market that has never occurred in Alaska before, and that is for cottonwood for furniture, which is exciting to be able to contribute to improvements to Alaska's GDP right now. So I think that has us, a new source or supply of our assets or value. Our partners in this particular effort are the State Division of Forestry, the Mental Health Trust Land, and the University of Alaska, so that we can hopefully provide a 10-year supply. Our combined target volume is 150 million board feet. That particular holding that we have is 13,400 acres. It had been closer to 14,000 acres, but having taken that Chilcoot parcel off the table, we are now at 13,400 acres of holdings in that area. And the reason we partner with some of these other folks is that they're adjacent to our lands, so sometimes we can access, do easier access to our own lands. And they also have a similar missions and fiduciary responsibilities with respect to being trust or having beneficiaries. Of course, in this negotiated sale, it will have to be at or above fair market value. That is how we do our sales. And, of course, the project will comply with all applicable local, state, and federal laws. In particular, I wanted to mention that we do comply with the Forest Practices Act, which crosses multiple agencies here in Alaska, the Department of Environmental Conservation, Fish and Game, DNR, those types of agencies as well. We always do that. Currently, we have a development and disposal plan out for public comment, and of course, we will also obtain necessary approvals from the Haines Borough. We have a public open house scheduled for Haines for April 26th so that we can help answer more questions and explain the process in more detail to them. And others who may be interested. Some of the benefits from this particular endeavor would be, of course, generating revenue for the endowment, which we anticipate will be in the $10 to $15 million range for this asset that we hold. And it would also infuse the local community economy with $90 million in private capital and infrastructure. And would also require 40 to 45 new positions or jobs in the local area, 20 to 25 to support maritime, and 20 jobs in the construction areas.
Christine, that is amazing information for the small community of Haines, it would seem to me. I mean, $90 million infused into their local community. Plus, they have mining opportunity in the area.
Correct. I believe there is a mine, I think it might be called Constantine, that has, it looks like, some encouraging developments, potential developments. And I believe there are other recent findings, such as the Mental Health Trust that has subsurface rights, and others, and DNR, the state itself. As a landowner. Yes, thank you.
Christine, you mentioned that you're partnering with other entities in this sale. Are you able to tell us who those other entities are?
With the other landowners, I can. The State Division of Forestry, a state agency, is one of our partners. The Mental Health Trust Land Office, that also has lands in the area. And the United States Forest Service also, they're helping us do more in workforce development in the area. And so we recently were able to obtain some small grants to help us with that so that we can ensure that people are trained for the jobs that will be needed there.
So have you seen local interest then in the job preparation area, or have you not quite gotten to that stage yet of offering?
We haven't gotten to that stage yet. I believe, if I understand correctly, the grant was just, we were just notified this morning that we're successful. So we're very excited about that. It's been a lot of moving parts to try and coordinate The other partners, the private landholders, do not, I can't release their names, of course, or the buyer itself.
It's exciting news. You know, I'm quite struck by the cottonwood market, and would invite those interested parties to come to South Central. My neighborhood has lots of cottonwood. I had no idea it had value. You certainly can't burn it in a wood stove.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I've recently found I have allergies myself, and cottonwood happens to be one of them, so it's like, oh, goodness. you can imagine, we are looking at trying to diversify our revenue. We do, you know, of all of our holdings, our remaining holdings and that we have, we try to not put all of our eggs in one basket, or at least I'm trying not to do that for the university. But I did clearly see I think it was last year, and it was made very clear to me, when the legislature said it is the intent of the legislature that the University of Alaska further develop and improve upon utilization of its land grants in order to generate additional revenue. And I know the University Board of Regents, and I certainly myself as a lifelong Alaskan take that very seriously. The University Board of Regents wants to sustain its trust endowment, and they, you know, have approved and directed us to do so, as that is our fiduciary responsibility. And if we can do that, it would help us reduce our reliance on state general funds. Our remaining trust assets that I wanted to point out to you, so you would kind of see what are the categories, what is left, what do you have. I would point out that timber resources is our largest remaining asset in terms of monetary value to the trust. We have several sales in process. The Edna Bay will complete this year, and then it will be done for our portion. The Valner Bay spring timber sale near Ketchikan, we are also doing a joint effort in that, and so that has not yet started, but it's also a very small, about 1,000 acres. Our Haynes tenure parcel that I mentioned. Mineral resources would be our next potential that we may have more value that we often don't even know about yet, but that would take capital to do those kinds of assessments. Right now we have gravel, primarily gravel, and coal with what assets we have. And then, of course, our remaining real estate, the majority of them that are remote, and about 10,000, 15,000 in federal in holdings. We really don't have any oil and gas. We have two leases on the Kenai Peninsula, and we very much appreciate those. But they're very, very small land leases. So when people ask me what it is I'm doing, I say that this past year I'm trying to do the best I can with what we have, which is very little, and I'm basically turning over every stump and rock and lot that we have to see what we can do, and is our responsibility, our fiduciary responsibility to do that. So thank you, and I'll try and answer any questions you might have.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Christine, for that presentation. I probably should know this from my days on the Finance Committee, but how much revenue does the university get from its land on a yearly basis?
Average is about $6.5 million. I'm sorry, through the chair, yeah. Senator Meyer. It's been a while since I've been here, the protocol, and my apologies.
And if I may, a couple more questions, and the next two may be better for Miles, but or Mr. Baker, but whoever wants to. You know, you made a good case that we have a grant deficit of 360,000 acres. Mm-hmm. How do we get that? What do we need to do? How can we help? I guess.
through the chair, Senator Meyer, thank you for that question. I think as I mentioned earlier, the legislature has been very supportive in the past of trying to make that happen. I think in my view, pushed it as far as they could push it, and the state Supreme Court has now said that absent some sort of federal program, federal construct, sort of sanctioned by the federal government, that the state won't be able to do that. And so I would say, just in short, the continued support of the legislature, the understanding that, or recognition that it is, that at least the federal government considers this a state obligation with what the state was already received, or the state might receive. And that, I think, that's the new thing that from our perspective puts even more, we want whatever this becomes to be defensible and to be a legitimate federal program that accomplishes good things for Alaska in general. And so I think just being supportive of that and anything the legislature can do to acknowledge that responsibility of the state would be helpful.
So, yes, Senator Meyer.
Madam Chair, can we send resolutions to Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan and Representative Young saying, please fight for us to get the land that the university should have got whenever, back in 1800s or 19, whenever it was?
Through the chair, yes. Yes, Senator Meyer. And I believe the other body has actually introduced, there is a resolution that was drafted in the other body this year. It has not, I don't believe it's moved yet, but I don't think that's for any reason other than they just haven't gotten to it.
Okay. If I may,
I'd be happy to forward that to the committee.
Okay. Well, it just seems like you've been fighting this battle for some time. Do you get any feedback from our Washington delegation?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, what we've gotten from the delegation, and we recognize that the Senator Murkowski and the Senate Energy Committee, in terms of a piece of legislation, I mean, that's where it needs to come, and we've had many conversations with them, kicked around different ideas. What they've asked is that they get a clear communication from the state that this is a state, we're shoulder to shoulder, the DNR, the administration, the university are sort of shoulder to shoulder, because they have a number of priorities, land in particular. There are a lot of competing priorities. We've traditionally, the land that has been discussed that would come to the university over the years has been heavily ID'd in the Tongass, and it's a very difficult place to do any sort of land work. So what they've asked is that it's clearly communicated as a state priority, and that they understand it's a university priority. But I think that's the biggest thing we can do.
Well, Madam Chair, I appreciate that, Mr. Baker. So whatever we can do as a state to show that we are shoulder to shoulder, as you said, with the university on making this happen, I guess I would like to know. I think the chairman and this committee would like to know, because it seems like with Senator Murkowski as chair of resources back in D.C. that this may be the time. I mean, if we can get ANWR, we can surely get you 360,000 acres. I know it's not that easy, but thank you. Oh, I do have one more question, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Meyer.
So the amount of land that we have, how does that compare with the Mental Health Trust as far as number of acres, I guess?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, Madam Chairman, perhaps the Mental Health Trust, I don't have that information. I don't know if Christine has that information.
Well, Wynn Menifee is on the line.
Okay.
Mr. Menefee, did you hear Senator Meyer's question, basically asking how much land does the Mental Health Trust Land Office manage?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Myers. I'm Wynn Menefee, chief. I'm executive director of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Land Office. And in answer to that, we have approximately 1 million acres, which could be either fee simple or it could be just the subsurface. But generally speaking, it's about 1 million acres.
Any follow-up, Senator Meyer?
No, I just need to refresh my memory here, if I may, Madam Chair. And the Mental Health Trust got their acreage through donations. I'm trying to remember how you got all those acres.
Senator Meyer, through the chair, the trust got the land originally through the Alaska Mental Health Enabling Act. It was enacted in 58, if I'm correct, and. But there was the issue of the state mismanaging the trust land. There's a lawsuit in 94 or 84, but it basically settled about 94. And there was a reconstitution of the trust, and that land came from state lands that were not original trust lands. It came from original trust lands, and it was a mix, about half and half of that, because some lands were already encumbered and used for things that didn't benefit the trust. And so in that reconstitution, they brought whole the million acres plus an endowment of money, too. So that's how it got reconstituted, but it's not donations or anything like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Coghill.
I think Senator Meyer got my point on trying to get the legislature to speak. I know that there has been several letters written, but I don't know that there's been a resolution at this point.
Well, you know, I think Miles brought up the point that we need to demonstrate alignment with agencies, the administration, and the legislature. So we do have Deputy Commissioner Heidi Hansen here in the room, and I guess I would inquire of her where DNR is at in terms of supporting land transfer to the university.
Good afternoon, Chairman Giesel. I apologize, but this is Heidi Hansen for the record, Deputy Commissioner, DNR. I just recently learned about this issue, I must admit, and I unfortunately didn't hear all of the presentation, so I'm not sure what I missed, but we would be happy to get back to you as soon as possible about sort of where things are at in terms of DNR's engagement to date.
That would be great. I can see where it would be important to have agencies as well as the legislature and the executive branch all in alignment as we make an appeal to the federal government. So that would be great. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Hansen.
Thank you.
We also have the state forester online, Mr. Mache, and I know he's always looking for opportunity for timber sales as well, so I'm going to actually call on Director Mache and ask, you know, how you're partnering with the university and the mental health lands in terms of the timber opportunities and how you see opportunities going forward, Director Mache.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This is Chris Mache, Director of the Division of Forestry and State Forester, for the record. And to answer your question, we've been able to collaborate with both organizations around the state, where we have ownership that is intermingled. And so this isn't really new. We've been doing it for quite some time. It's just that the projects have gotten a little larger over time and involve more acres and more potential revenue and cost, also from an investment standpoint. Christine gave a great example of the Edna Bay project, which is a joint project that includes many landowners. We are actually able to finance the construction of a log transfer facility at the site that multiple landowners will use with DNR funds, and that's the first project is the university, so they're using that LTF site to facilitate the sale of their timber. The next one will be the Good Neighbor Authority project she mentioned. which is a U.S. Forest Service owned timber sale, but the state of Alaska has completed the sale and will manage that sale on behalf of the Forest Service through the GNA authority, which is relatively new. And then the state will follow up with a sale of our own on the state forest that's at Edna Bay. So there will be at least three different sales on three parcels. Sea Alaska may also use the same LTF. So it's a great example, as she outlined, of a collaboration between many landowners to keep costs down and be very efficient in how we're managing the resource. The Haines project's probably the most recent one and is quite exciting in addition. There is a fair amount of investment that will be required there on some of the infrastructure pieces, and the university's taking the lead on that, but it has real potential to duplicate what was done at Edna Bay.
Very good. Mr. Mache, you know, we've talked in the past, you know, it was last fall or so, there were some potential buyers of timber. And one of the impediments had to do with our forests being certified. I think I'm getting that correct, though this is certainly not my expertise. It does the university, and the interest was in the interior, timber in the interior, and also down in the Matsu Valley, as I recall. Is any of the university land adjacent to those properties that the state has, and you know, how could this possibly go forward for both entities?
Yes, Madam Chair, in the Matsu Valley, all three of the two trusts and the state of Alaska have intermingled ownerships in that location, too. I'd have to look at maps to tell you I'm not familiar enough with their ownership to know what kind of timber resources might be there, but certainly there could be an opportunity to collaborate in that area. Of course, the one difference is we don't have a state forest there, so that puts state land in a little different a light and perspective in terms of potential sales. And as far as the certification question, that was more important to the Valley proposal because that much of that wood would have gone into the energy markets in Japan, and the certification piece was an energy market requirement for entry into that marketplace. The projects in Haines and Southeast are not energy projects, so they don't have a similar requirement at this time.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. That's helpful. Any other questions for Director Mache? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much, Director, for joining us. So I had one other question for Miles and Christine. You know, on slide 8, you have the state anti-dedication clause has an explicit exception when required by the federal government for state participation in federal programs. So we're talking about students here going to the university, and certainly they're getting federal loans. Could there be some kind of state match for loans that would create this exemption? I'm just trying to think of possible ideas to bypass that anti-dedication clause.
Madam Chairman, I don't may if Mr. Harrington's online, perhaps that's a good question for our council.
All right, sounds good. Mr. Harrington, did you hear the question?
Yes, I did. Thank you for the question. I would say that is the type of creative thinking that we're looking around for. I don't think that we have looked into the student loan component of this, and I will certainly be doing so. But that's the so I don't have an answer that I could say for sure that it's a viable idea or not, but we will certainly follow up on that.
Thank you. And Mr. Harrington, for our secretary who's keeping records, could you introduce yourself for the record? Your name and title?
Sure. I apologize. Andy Harrington, and I'm an associate general counsel with the University of Alaska.
Very good. Thank you so much for participating. Any other questions for members of this team? We have general counsel, of course, forestry, and Mental Health Land Trust. All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for this presentation. Senator Meyer asked a very serious question. We really do want to help in any way we can. So if Senate Simple Resolution, which of course we can expeditiously pass in our body, would be helpful, we would be interested in doing that. So please keep us advised, and I think we could act rather nimbly on that if we needed to.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Coghill.
I know that because of the position we're in the Arctic, that the university is one of the Arctic universities, and we work with NOAA extensively. So I would try to really gather up all the federal programs that the university is valuable to the federal government for, and make the case that the benefit for Arctic investment is huge, and so the underpinnings of financial well-being by this federal program grant would be significant. So I would encourage you to go to that kind of creative thinking as well.
Very nice idea. I appreciate that, Senator Coghill. The University of the Arctic, right? University of Alaska.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. We will do that. And Madam Chairman, if I could, the resolution I couldn't put my fingers on that Representative Pruitt and Representative Grin had introduced was House Joint Resolution 39.
Very good. We'll look that up and maybe spruce up the language a bit, because we are the Senate, you know. very good, though. That could certainly be the basis. Great. Well, thank you so much for that presentation and update. This is an incredibly important subject. We are in fiscal straits. I know I hear from students a lot about the increasing tuition and how can the state help. So this is a way that we could help, is if we could get more land to the university that would be productive land. So thank you. So with that, thank you for the presentation. This concludes our meeting for today. Our next meeting will be Monday, April 9th. At that point, we're going to hear Senate Joint Resolution 9, which also deals with some lands. And at this time, we will stand adjourned. The time is 4:32 p.m.